Then Jesus said to the Jews who had believed in him. Now, before we go any further, I just want you to remember who he identifies here that he's speaking to. Then Jesus said to the Jews who had believed in him, "If you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free." And they answered him, "We are descendants of Abraham and have never been slaves to anyone. What do you mean by saying you will be made free?" And Jesus answered them, "Very truly I tell you, everyone who commits sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not have a permanent place in the household. The son has a place there forever. So if the son makes you free, you will be free indeed. I know that you are descendants of Abraham, yet you look for an opportunity to kill me, because there is no place in you for my word. I declare what I have seen in the Father's presence. As for you, you should do what you have heard from the Father." You know, Jesus is amazing because he never wearies of slow learners. The conversation he's having with these Jews comes off sounding like they're speaking a different language. Jesus' entire ministry was about the spiritual man. Yet the people he came in contact with, those that were familiar with his teachings, continued to misunderstand him. And to me, their reply made no sense at all, in that they had actually been slaves to the Egyptians, to the Babylonians, and currently were actually enslaved to the Roman Empire. This being ruled by the Romans would shortly lead the Jews to being forced from Israel, their land, and scattered throughout the world. But my concern with the Jews in this passage is that they were clueless, that they were lost. As a young boy, I was a member of an active and great Boy Scout troop. We lived in Arcadia, California, which was a very wealthy community based on the fact they had a horse track in their town. And the leaders of this organization, they loved to go on backpacking trips and camping. And there were numerous weekend hikes, and each summer there was a week-long trip either to the Grand Canyons or up into the Sierra Mountains. And there were a lot of kids in this troop. I don't know, because I was a kid, but I would guess there was about 80 or so. And there were a lot of guys that liked to hike. And because there were so many, our abilities were varied. There was a group of six that liked to hike very fast, and I was a part of this group. As I recall, our reasoning was that we liked to get to the camping spot fast and first, so we could stake out the best campsite, and then we could get on to playing. We enjoyed playing in the streams and the rivers once we got up there. The adults on the trip usually hung back with the slower boys, allowing us faster hikers to go on ahead. This did not cause a problem, as we were trained in reading maps. We would go over our route with the adults, so we knew where the group intended to spend the night, and the trail was generally pretty well marked. One spring Saturday, we got up early and we drove up into the mountains above San Bernardino. We had our route mapped out, our canteens full, our backpacks on, and off we went. It took about 15 minutes for our group to leave everyone else in the dust. As I recall, the trail was pretty easy. It wasn't very steep, but it seemed a little odd, as there were several times where, according to the map, we were to make a turn, but the trail wasn't really marked. And because it was spring, a lot of the growth had grown up and the trail was a little bit obscured. But being smart 11-year-olds, we were undeterred. Never thinking we should wait for the rest of the group to catch up, finally we came upon the campsite, and it was the most glorious waterhole a kid could ever find. The creek bed was covered with large rocks, and somehow out of this was a pool about 20 feet across and 10 feet deep, I would guess. We quickly staked out our spots, put our tents up, and began to play. We got down to the business of having fun. After a while, we became hungry, so we broke out some of the food we brought. And it was during the break in fun that we mused over the fact that none of the others had yet arrived. We discussed the trip in about how poorly the trail seemed to be marked in places, but that it was not a very difficult hike. But as most 11-year-old boys, we were able to rationalize the situation so it would come out in our favor, and we returned to playing in this great waterhole. And I do not recall having a watch, but based on the sun, I know it was late afternoon when we finally heard the group coming. They were making lots of noise and yelling our names, which seemed a little odd. So we hollered back, and here they came up the trail. Only it wasn't the group, it was two of the adult leaders. And they were looking for us because we'd been lost, and we didn't know it. If you read Ecclesiastes, the 8th chapter, excuse me, Solomon writes in verses 16 and 17, "When I applied my mind to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, how one's eyes see sleep neither day nor night, then I saw all the work of God, and that no one can find out what is happening under the sun. However much they may toil in seeking, they will not find it out. Even though those who are wise claim to know, they cannot find it out." Solomon understands that even our brightest people who spend their days seeking the answers to the whys and hows of our daily lives, they will never come to a complete understanding. So blinded are we by our good fortune, just following the trail that has led us to this exact place today. We do not see that we are really lost. Well, I don't mean lost in the sense that we are separated from the group or that we should be living somewhere else, but our lives are a journey from start to finish, and I do not believe we arrive until that final day when we are judged to have been faithful or unfaithful. Sure, we can understand how the body works and find ways to cure diseases and help people with handicaps to live better lives. We can send pictures along waves of light to distant planets or to grandparents who live in another part of the world. Yet we struggle with getting along with our fellow man. We place provocative bumper stickers on our cars. We force those in the car next to us to listen to music being played on our radio. We harass an inexperienced or an especially nice teacher at school. We look for ways to be offended by our employer or coworkers. We demand to have our way in our marriages, never seeing the damage caused to our kids or the partner we join in marriage to live our lives as a team. Soon we are blazing our own trail and choosing our own destination. Sure, we can make out the trail where so many have gone before us, but many of the signs of the trails have disappeared. And the growth of society has made the trusted old ways less visible. Yet onward we trudge, just like that small group of Boy Scouts, ignoring all the clues that we are off the trail, yet continuing on, confident we will find the correct destination. On June 4th of 2004, I sat in the stands of a football stadium in Boulder City, Nevada, and watched my niece, Jennifer, graduate from high school. As with many graduations, there are some seniors who perform songs for the crowd. And on this particular night, a young lady sang a song from my high school days entitled, "Show Me the Way." The words of the song speak of growing up believing everything is good, that there are people you can look up to, that good triumphs over evil, and that there is a place called heaven. And one day our dreams are shattered. Our heroes let us down. Evil seems to be winning. And the writer asks for a sign that this is not true. At most graduations I've attended, the speakers talk about how they will change the world they live in, about all the opportunities there are, and how this class of graduates is going to impact the world they are entering. This girl sang a song asking for someone to show her the way. And while I do believe there are so many reasons for our young people to look expectantly at the future, I think this young lady showed great insight in asking for help in seeing the way. We can be confused about the trail we are on. We can be lost and not even realize it. Life is great. We have a place to sleep, food to eat, friends around us, and fun stuff's going on all the time. But are we really lost? Jesus told the Jews they could be free from the slavery of sin, but they responded not with "show me the way," but with indignation. Slavery? That doesn't apply to us. We have never been slaves. We are the sons of the great Abraham. And just like these Jews in John 8, we too believe in Jesus. These were not the Pharisees who were trying to trip him up and to belittle him in front of his followers. These were not the group wanting to get rid of Jesus. These people were among those who believed Jesus was the Messiah. Yet they were lost, and they didn't know it. In fact, they were pretty sure they were in good shape. So how does God show us the way? Well, Jesus told us that he is in the way. He is the way in John 14:6. But how does that help me each day to deal with life's disappointments? How does that help me handle the temptations that come with success? or situations where I have to make a moral decision. These are questions I've struggled with, and I've concluded that the answer is really very simple. First, we must allow God into the process of our lives. If we are disappointed by an outcome, we must ask God to help us through it. If we struggle with a sin that has gripped us, we cannot defeat it on our own. But we must ask God to help us as we wrestle with it. When faced with a decision, we must bring God into our dilemma, because no matter how smart we are, how quick we are on our feet, or how much experience we have in dealing with trouble, we cannot know all the possible answers or solutions. We cannot know where relief may come from. And it's been my experience, the answer often comes from a completely unexpected source. Joseph's life took many turns, and most of them were not positive changes. And I guess Mr. Walling, Jeff talked about all those today. He was sold into slavery by his brothers. He landed a good job, but then was thrown into jail for refusing to give in to his master's wife's lust. He did something nice for a fellow prisoner, but was forgotten by him until something happened to jog the former prisoner's memory. I have wondered if the cupbearer had spoken on Joseph's behalf earlier, if he would have been in the right spot to interpret Pharaoh's dream. Oh, Jim, some of you might be thinking, that's a great story, and I believe it can happen, but knowing that things turned out for Joseph doesn't really help me. Well, I can tell you these types of things do happen today. An example would be of my sister, Sue. She wanted her oldest daughter, Jennifer, to go to Oklahoma Christian University, but her husband was adamantly against it. It was too far from home. It was too expensive compared to where she could go near their home in Nevada, because at that time, Nevada residents could go tuition-free to UNLV. And he wasn't sure about the quality of education she would receive there anyways. After all, it was Oklahoma. And they went round and round over this for about 6 months or more. And my sister prayed about it, and she was convinced in her heart that this is where Jennifer should go. But there was not any movement from her husband. So she was torn between doing what she thought would be the right thing to do and going against her husband's wishes. But her husband, Tony, was in the RV selling business. And one day at his work, he was talking with a customer who he knew to be a successful man. And the subject of Jennifer's education came up because it was on his heart. They were talking about it, and they were arguing about it. And when he told this man about his wife wanting their daughter to go to Oklahoma Christian, the man's eyes lit up because he had attended Oklahoma Christian University. He said it was a great school, and he recommended it highly. Later on in the day, he ran into a man and his wife who were there shopping. He had met them a few times, and they both happened to be medical doctors. The topic of Jennifer's education came up again. And the moment he mentioned Oklahoma Christian University, the couple's eyes lit up because they also had attended Oklahoma Christian University. Now, I don't know what the chances are of one person from Oklahoma Christian being in God-forsaken Las Vegas, Nevada. But within the matter of a few hours, he met three. He met three. I would have to say this has to fall in the category of God had a hand in it. Well, of course, Tony went home, and he told Jennifer and Sue that he had made up his mind. And as Jennifer told the story, she was certain that her dad was going to say, I'm tired of talking about this, and put his foot down and say, you're going to UNLV. But instead, he told them that he had decided that she was going to get to go to Oklahoma Christian. You see, after we have brought God into the process, we must allow him to work things out. This can often take some time, but not because God doesn't understand how important this is to us, but it may be the circumstances are not yet ready. And I believe this was the case with Joseph. I think if the cupbearer had gotten out and said, hey, I know this great guy, Joseph, you know, he could replace the guy you just took his head off and come in. But it took Pharaoh having a dream and not knowing how to interpret it and not having anybody that could do it. And the cupbearer goes, I know a guy. So until Pharaoh was in need of Joseph's dream decoding ability, he probably was not ready to promote Joseph, a foreigner, to be the number two person above all his native-born advisors. Most often I find that I just do not pay attention to what God is trying to tell me. I am too determined that I have read the trail correctly, and I'm not willing to accept that, in fact, I am lost. As I have matured, I have discovered there are more things I need help with. I still have the same struggles with my mouth, saying things I wish it hadn't, or getting a little crazy over things. But I've discovered that I need God to help me. You know, we've all struggled with things. We struggle with raising kids. We struggle with trying to, let them grow and mature and make their own decisions. And we want to be involved in that, but we know they have to grow and learn to live their own lives. Many have had to deal with aging parents. You know, that's a struggle. And, we have some of that going on right now. We've had some of that recently in our lives. And then there's church work. You know, how many classes can I teach before I burn out? Or am I an effective teacher at all? Am I doing what needs to be done? How can we draw people into a greater involvement with the body? And the list goes on and on. But we need to look at what the trail is that we're on. And we need God to show us. We need God to show us where we need to be. If those leaders had not found us, at some point, even as dumb 11-year-old boys, we would have had to acknowledge that we were in fact lost. And that we somehow had missed the trail. And now extreme action was necessary to find the way home. But unfortunately, at that point, it probably would have been dark, which would have made the problem even worse. It would be nice if we could ask for help before it takes a miracle to save us. Fortunately for us, the adults in our group, they didn't give up, and they eventually found us. And God also does not give up on us, but constantly looks for us to acknowledge our need for him. In James, the 4th chapter, verse 8, James writes, "Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded." Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Too bad I struggle with this mightily. Rarely do I seek God's help before I'm forced to admit that I've swum into the lake over my head. But still the song plays. Every night I say a prayer in the hopes that there's a heaven. And every day I'm more confused as the saints turn into sinners. All the heroes and legends I knew as a child have fallen to idols of clay, and I feel this empty place inside, so afraid that I've lost my way. Show me the way, show me the way. Take me tonight to the river and wash my illusions away. Please show me the way. And as I slowly drift to sleep for a moment, dreams are sacred. I close my eyes and know there's peace in a world so filled with hatred, that I wake up each morning and turn on the news to find we've so far to go. And I keep on hoping for a sign, so afraid that I just won't know. Show me the way, show me the way. Take me tonight to the river and wash my confusion away. Show me the way. You know, we face problems every day. We deal with people. We deal with troubles. But most of it, I find, is within me. I struggle within me. You know, there's disappointment. We think we should deserve something we don't get, or we should be doing better than we are. So we become disappointed. Sometimes we hang out with people that we shouldn't hang out with. Or maybe our attitude just causes us problems. But God wants to help us. God wants to help us. He wants to show us the way. But we have to submit to Him. And that starts with realizing that we're lost. I'm lost. And sometimes we look around and we go, it's pretty good. I'm lost in a good place. So it's a struggle sometimes to see it. But I think if we seek God, if we seek Him out, and we try to find out what He wants us to do, He will show us. He will even show us a better way than what we have. I think Jeff's lesson this morning was great because, you know, when Joseph finally got to that place where he had all the power, he had it all. He lived in a nice place. He had the best food to eat. He wore the nice clothes, way better than that coat of many colors. And he even had the ability to seek revenge on his brothers. But he didn't. Because God showed him a better way. And because he listened and he followed, God's people were saved. And here we are. Let's sing the song that the song leader picked out.